Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Beryl-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today one of our favorite guests is back. Deborah Weiss-Ford is here. She is a partner with Jackson Lewis. Welcome, Deb. Back
Thank
to the
you,
show.
Thank you, Dave. And hi, everybody. Nice to be here again. It's always a highlight of my year.
I love having you on. We always talk about fun topics. We always talk about sometimes controversial topics. And today is not going to be any exception. We're going to be talking about our workplace diversity programs doing more harm than good. Deb, this is a hot topic right now here in 2023.
It is. We're seeing a lot of pushback on DEI training that has been going on for quite some time. Look, it's really not a new issue. I mean, this type of training has been done for decades, but it became intensified after 2020 with the murder of George Floyd, and a lot of companies were very interested in doing D&I initiatives. So trainings, discussions, that type of thing in the workplace. And more recently, we've seen some pushback to that. And that is both in the workplace, and there have been a couple of commentators who have gone to social media and other news outlets and have basically said that these programs can do more harm than good. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
So from a context perspective, you do actually these trainings, correct?
I do. I do quite a bit, yes.
And when you do the trainings, do you find that there's a lot of engagement with the, you know, the audience, the company, the organization? Does it spark a lot of questions? You know, what's your interpretation of that initially as we talk about the training themselves?
Very much so. People are very engaged in the topic. There are strong feelings usually on both sides of the equation, all of which I think is good for training. And for me, I'm always looking at the issue of getting people to think. I don't think this is the be all and end all. You're not going to have a diversity training and everything is going to be fine. And sometimes I think we put too much emphasis on that. It's all part of a process of getting people to discuss issues in the workplace. And they start often with unconscious bias and the training about what that means. And the whole point is to do education and to get people thinking about things and talking. And I think if you look at it from that standpoint, as opposed to this one training for 1 hour will fix everything, which obviously doesn't make any sense. So I think we just have to reframe the question.
It's kind of like any other training, right? It requires a real in-depth understanding. It's no different than harassment training or any other program. You have to understand what it's all about and how it impacts your organization. Just for a context, DEI is diversity, equity, and inclusion training, for those who may not know the specifics of it. And it's designed to help organizations become more welcoming to members of traditionally marginalized groups. You know, when you talk about marginalized groups, you know, do people ask what that is, and do they kind of talk about what that might mean in the training?
They do. I mean, we generally start out with some definitions of what diversity is. You know, for example, you know, people always say, what's the difference between diversity and inclusion? And for diversity, the example that is given all the time is it's being asked to the dance, and the inclusion is actually being asked to dance, which I think is a really nice, quick way to understand what the difference is. And the goal for the employer is to have both diversity and inclusion. And that's what we're looking for in the training. But you do get a lot of pushback from people in the training. Why do we need to do this? Why does it matter? And it becomes particularly difficult in Northern New England, where it is a little bit more difficult to hire because it's not a terribly diverse area of the country. And so we get a lot of pushback on that too. But for the most part, I think these trainings are very helpful. I think it gets people to think about things, hiring issues, recruitment, retention, all of which we can talk about this morning.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the geographic area of New England is a challenge when it comes to that in terms of the number the numbers of diversity, right? The numbers of different ethnic groups and so forth. Yeah, tell us a little bit about your training, though. Let's talk about what training is specifically. Kind of break it up for us.
Sure. So the trainings that I do and the trainings that I have been to really follow a fairly similar format. And that is to first talk about unconscious bias. And so I think that the employees really need to understand what unconscious bias is. We all have them. I mean, I think that, you know, we all know that it is not a new issue. You know, there, you probably remember, Dave, there's that old riddle, you know, about a father and a son that are in a car accident. Remember that from, you know, probably your high school days. And the story is, so the father and son are in a car accident and the dad dies at the scene and the son is pretty badly injured and he's rushed to the hospital. And in the operating room, the surgeon comes in, he takes a look at the boy, and he says, and the surgeon says, "I can't operate on this boy. He is my son. How can this be?" And so the answer is that it's his mother, right? But what happens is that back when that riddle was first came about and was talked about, people couldn't figure out the answer. Now the answer could be two dads as well, you know, and somebody pointed that out to me in a training, which was a really good point. So this is not a new issue. So what we're looking at is to identify certain unconscious bias, and whether it's an issue with people of color or a gender issue, and it can even be a non-protected class. You know, there are studies that show, for example, that people who are taller, particularly males, and more attractive are more likely to get hired, are more likely to get a promotion. And so it is on lots of different levels. And so for me, I spend a fair amount of time introducing that concept and going through various scenarios where you can show that there is this unconscious bias. You know, my quick snap mental judgment is that X, Y, and Z is happening when in fact that's really not the case. And that's what it's all about.
You know, do you find that there's conflict when this conversation comes up? I'm not talking just about disagreement, but actually can lead to conflict at times.
Very much so. People have very strong feelings about this. And I think for the most part, it depends on how the training is done. I never think any training should be threatening, and I never think any training should be accusatory. It really defeats the purpose. I think the whole point is for people just to be educated and to think about things. But when you make that comment, everybody has an unconscious bias, you can imagine that there are some people who think you are attacking them, which is really not what the point is. And so what I try to do and what I've seen other trainers do is get specific examples. I'm trying to think, you know, for example, Wanda Sykes, who's a Black comedian, wrote this great op-ed for the New York Times a couple of years ago. So she's getting on a plane and she's by herself. And as she's going on the plane looking for her seat, a white woman is sitting next to another Black woman. And the white woman stands up and says, "Here, would you like this seat to sit next to your friend?" Well, Wanda Sykes doesn't know this other Black person. It's just that this automatic, quick-hitting mental judgment basically said that, oh, you must be friends or you must be related. And that's what this is all about. So it's not meant to be accusatory, and because all of us have examples of times when we've done this. You know, there's not a person that hasn't had some of these issues. So what I'm trying to do is say it's not a bad thing. It's human nature. The issue is, how do we correct that? How do we interrupt that bias and move on to something that is more equity and more diverse and more inclusive?
Of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour here on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And of course, we're talking with Deborah Weiss Ford, and we're talking about our workplace diversity programs doing more harm than good. I'm your host, David Chulo. And of course, this is the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. Deb, you know, it's interesting, and I certainly, when we've talked to people about this subject, and even when I've had conversations, people don't like the fact that we're talking about stereotyping sometimes. You know, and that word comes up sometimes. Any thoughts or ideas on how you deal with that issue? Because there is this perception of that.
There is a perception of that. And I really don't see this type of training as saying that you know, we do stereotypes. Of course, we all, you know, have stereotypes of things. And I think the whole point is, again, to be educated, to sort of break through that and look at people more as individuals and less as a group. I mean, I think that's really what the goal is in these kinds of trainings. Everybody has value. Everybody participates in a different way in a group setting. And so, for example, one of the things we talk about in the training is the value to the company of having a more diverse workforce. And there must be thousands of case studies, I mean, literally, that that deal with this issue of how profits will go up when you have a more diverse workforce. And there are specific examples of that. One comes to mind is a mock jury trial. It was meant, I think it's Tufts University, which was meant as a case study. And so what they did was get the same fact pattern. It happened to do with a crime and a breaking and entering. And the defendant was Black. And they had a white jury and then a mixed race jury. And what they found was that the mixed race jury spent more time on the problem, asked more questions, wanted to look at the evidence more carefully. And all of that was meant to say, it's not that that jury was smarter. It's just that that jury spent more time and worked harder, because there were diverse people in the group, likely with diverse points of view. And I think that's really what the point is. So there's that issue. And then there is the issue of many employees, particularly millennials, and studies show this, where they are looking for a workforce that has taken initiatives to deal with diversity and inclusion in the workplace. So there are lots of business reasons why the employer wants to look at this issue. So it's not really a stereotyping issue. It's an issue to make the workplace better in some ways.
You know, one of the other questions that I hear is, I want to, you know, about the training or about things, there's this question between equity and fairness. And I hear a lot of this, and certainly I hear this a lot in terms of people saying, well, things aren't fair. We want things to all be equal. And the truth is, you and I both know there's no such thing as true equality. It's everybody has some perception that they're going to be of what they believe fairness is, what they believe equality is. How do we deal with the unconscious bias, but how people feel, the emotional connection about this?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I don't have a great pat answer for that. But what I would say is that I am just a big believer in education and talking about issues to see if people can come to a general consensus. I mean, to the extent that the employer is actually doing reverse discrimination, you know, for example, that would terminate a white employee and hire a Black employee just to have diversity, that's not okay. And that would be illegal, and always has been, as, you know, white people are in a protected class as well. And so that's some of the pushback that you get, a fear of losing my job, a fear of not getting that promotion. And we are more recently seeing numerous cases that are dealing with that very issue. So I think that's very valid point. But generally, that's really not what's happening here. What we're talking about is when we have openings or we're transitioning to a different product or a different way that we're doing business, that we look at diverse issues. So it becomes the whole issue of unconscious bias and diversity becomes a huge issue in hiring, you know, as you know, because you deal a lot with hiring issues. Particularly in today's world, where recruitment is just an incredible impediment for employers. And then when you try to make it more diverse, particularly in Northern New England, you know, you do run into a lot of obstacles.
You know, one of the other things that I had a question about in regards to this is about the hiring side of it. And, you know, people use sometimes their discussions of, well, we do an affirmative action plan, we do some sort of tracking of the people, we're trying to be more diverse. I mean, in some cases, they're saying we are giving preferential treatment because we don't have or we aren't diverse. Organization sometimes says we want to be more diverse. So because of that, we want to hire more diverse people, and we may give more weight to that diversity. Your thoughts?
Right. Yeah, so that's a really good question. And we definitely are seeing more, particularly large employers, trying to utilize that as part of a strategy to become more diverse. And oftentimes, my work in this field is doing hiring trainings with hiring managers and other people that interview. So, you know, that is okay to do as long as you're hiring a qualified employee. I mean, if you have a Black employee and a white employee and they're both equal and you decide to go with the Black employee because you have diversity goals, that's not unlawful. You know, that's a value that a company is putting on that putting in place to meet certain goals. So that's okay. But there are other things that maybe cross the line. You know, what if you have an incentive? What if you give your hiring people a bonus if they hire people of color, or you know, they hire disabled people or somebody in a minority? Is that okay? And a lot of the cases now are pressing that very issue, you know, that is not okay, because then you're not getting the most qualified person. You know, you're finding the person to meet your goals. So I think employers really need to get a lot of training on what is lawful and what is not lawful in the hiring range. But you are absolutely correct that we are definitely seeing much more of a push in the hiring area, because that's where it is easier in a sense to focus your diversity efforts by bringing people in at a certain level.
We're talking with Deborah Weiss-Ford. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
With the legislative landscape consistently evolving, business owners and HR managers face increased challenges running their business. Whether it be earned paid leave in your state, those retirement savings programs that are popping up around the country, or dealing with paid family medical leave, Paper Trails is here to help your business be compliant. Paper Trails consists of a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. At Paper Trails, there's no 1-800 number, and they strive to treat their clients like neighbors, because they are. When a question or need arises, Paper Trails is right around the corner. Whether you're looking for accurate payroll and bookkeeping, assistance with local and federal compliance challenges, or additional services like benefit administration and employee onboarding, Paper Trails has the tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while they handle the paperwork. Visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour to learn more.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's Collision Center.
If your car is a wreck and you don't know where to go,
take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show. You can trust,
and it won't be a fuss. Take it to Moody's Collision Center.
M-O-O-D-Y. Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home. Sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot. Driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe. Put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Ferrell-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and again today we are talking with Deborah Weiss-Ford. She's with Jackson Lewis. She's a kick-butt attorney here. If you are an organization that needs an attorney, she's the one. All right? Was that fair? Is that pretty good?
No comment, but thank you for that.
Okay.
I like it.
All right. I figured you did. All right. So, you know, again, the topic here today is really talking about, is the EI working, right? And the diversity programs that are being done in organizations, are they working? And I think that's a really open question right now. It's almost like they checked the box and we did it. And now let's move on with our lives.
Yeah, look, that's a very valid point. I think those employers that are checking the box, you know, we do a training once a year, once every 2 years, and that's all we're going to do. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't expect it's going to work. And, you know, the articles that we're seeing recently, there was one in the New York Times by a guest columnist who basically said, does it do more harm than good? That's a fair criticism of employers who just take this one step and then nothing else happens. And I think that's worse in some ways because it's demoralizing for employees and they feel it's a waste of time and they feel you're not really committed and you're giving the lip service, but there's no they're there. And I think that's a major problem. But I would disagree for many employers who make it part of the initiative. And when I'm training, I'm always very careful to say, I'm not going to change the world here. It's really not what the goal is. It's just one step in a very long process to make you think about things, because education never should be harmful. It should always be helpful. And the goal is always to make you think. And I feel this way, and you do trainings too, I think, for anti-discrimination, respect in the workplace, anti-harassment. It's the same issue. If you're just going to do this once a year or once every other year, and you're just checking off the box, or you're, you know, making people watch some video that no one is paying attention to, then you're not really committed to the process. You know, it's you're just checking it off because it's required in your state, or you think it's going to help you in some lawsuit. And when the employers give that kind of a message, I would agree that it does more harm than good.
So let's just quickly get to the legal side of this for one quick question. Is it required by any state or any law to do diversity, equity, and inclusion training? Is it part of some requirement by any state currently?
Not in any northern New England states. I really can't speak for California, which would be, you know, one of the states where, or New York, where it's possible. But in the northern New England states, no. That's different than respect in the workplace, which, as you know, in Maine is a requirement to a certain extent. But in other states, obviously, as well. But the unconscious bias training or the diversity and equity and inclusion training is not a requirement in northern New England. There are employers, and I do this pretty much all the time as well, who will include this kind of training in the respect in the workplace. So add a component of bullying and what that means, because that's not in a protected class, as we know, and then add a component of DEI training as well. Most employers do a standalone, but some employers do it together. But you know, that's tough to do in an hour if you're looking at a short training.
Yeah, that's kind of the challenge sometimes, right? The amount of time given to make an impact in training. We see that in harassment as well, same thing. So an organization does training. What's the biggest argument for them to do it? What really, other than the right thing to do, what's a really good argument for the employer to understand why?
So one of the arguments is, for the most part, your employees want this. Contrary to, you know, everything we're reading on social media and in the news, your employees want to see some type of a commitment to diversity and inclusion. And that is shown by study after study, particularly, as I mentioned, with millennials. It's something like 60% of millennials say that they wouldn't take a job if they see that the employer is not committed to a more diverse and inclusive organization. And so that's part of it. So I think that's one of the reasons. I also think that for talking about defending lawsuits and for, you know, legal reasons, it's a good training to have, particularly for managers, so that they understand what they can do and what they can't do and what they can ask in a hiring question. Because I think there's a lot of ambiguity about that. And oftentimes we're asking employees to, for example, do a hiring interview with no training about what you can ask or what you can. And that's not just a D&I issue. That's an everything protected class issue. And, you know, as we know, if we're not going to train managers and how to properly ask a question and what they can ask and what they can't, you're asking for a lot of trouble. So that's part of the reasoning behind it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. There's still just a lot of questions, almost more questions than answers sometimes when it comes to this, in terms of organizations hearing it. They are hearing employees asking about it, and there's a lot of owners, especially if you talk about the Northeast. What is it? 80% of businesses are small businesses, family owned a lot. And they're just a lot of confusion about this. How do we get the education out there so that it's, you know, so that it's seen in a better light, I guess, is a question.
Yeah, but I think that's an education issue as well. I mean, I'm frequently asked by many of my clients, large and small, what type of training do I need to do? And usually with smaller employers and some larger, the question is more, what's legally required? And then what should I do? Because they're two, obviously, very
different questions. Yeah,
they really are. They're different questions and different answers. And so I'm always talking about doing at least some of the DEI training along with the respect in the workplace training and the anti-bullying training, because I think it is important for people to just start thinking about things and to decide how they want their company to move forward. It's an identity issue and a mission issue, I think, for a lot of companies. But I think it starts at that level of adding DEI training, but only if you're committed to it. You know, I would agree with the people who push back. If you're not committed to it and you're just going to, you know, as you say, check the box, really not worth doing it, because I don't think that's going to be a very helpful training. So I'm always trying to get employers to look at this in a different way. I think some clients really appreciate that and want to have these trainings. And there are, you know, some employers who are just, no, I don't want to do any training. You know, it's just a waste of time and I'm not interested in that.
You know, you sent over some information to me, obviously, prior to the show, and I appreciate that very, very much. And in that, you talk a little bit about, in one of the programs, about Coca-Cola versus Starbucks, two different approaches to DEI. You know, some of your colleagues, obviously, have put together some of this information. And I was wondering if you have some thoughts about this approach, these two approaches, which would be better, what's your take on it?
Sure. So the Coca-Cola one was really more of a requirement. A certain percentage of, for example, when they hired law firms, a certain percentage of the lawyers who handle the Coca-Cola matters and cases had to be people of color, or a certain gender. And there was a quota system that was actually on their website. And so that changed sometime last year because there was a lot of pushback about that, you know, having a quota or a certain number, a certain percentage, as opposed to a Starbucks approach, which was basically to look more at not doing quotas and more to add more diversity in the workplace, you know, by hiring people of color and by having certain trainings and by looking at it in a different way, you know, without doing a quota. I mean, my own feeling is, you know, I don't like quotas. I mean, I think there have been legal issues with quotas dating back to the Bakke case, you know, in the 1970s. You know, there are lots of issues with quotas, and the Supreme Court is always weighing in on that, including likely a case coming out sometime, you know, this year in 2023. I am much more in favor of doing a softer approach. One is the legality, but also I think that the, you know, approach of trying to look at this as a mission of the company, and whether it's hiring people of color or whether it's hiring more disabled people or gender issues, I think that's a better way to look at it. And I think it's less offensive to your employees and likely would get a not as a hard response to it as we see with quotas and somebody losing a job because they're white. I mean, that is what's causing some of the furor.
Again, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and of course, podcast nationally on all major podcast channels. We are talking with Deborah Weiss-Ford. Of course, we're talking about DEI training. We're talking about whether it does more harm than good. Deborah, what's interesting is this whole question about what companies should or should not say, what they should or should not do. Should you post it on information on the website? Is it something that people are looking for? Could you get in more trouble by posting the wrong things? I mean, today, of course, with social media, companies are kind of nervous posting almost anything because there is this backlash from both sides, right? This anti-diversity training, this for diversity training. It's tough for organizations today. What do you advise when it comes to all this type of what I'll call written work?
Yeah, I mean, I think employers, it really is incumbent on employers to have discussions with employees about why they are valuing certain DEI efforts. I think that's really important to do. And I spend some time with that in trainings, and a lot of trainers do as well, talking about the why. I mean, you can see sometimes when you're training and you know how people have their arms crossed and they're giving you that look like, what am I doing here? And I get that much more in anti-harassment training.
Oh gosh, yes.
Yeah, you've seen that as well. Like, what am I doing here? And or jokes are being made, or you know, you'll make a comment about how it's really not a good idea to use the words sweetie, honey, babe in 2023. I mean, it's never been a good idea, but it's really a bad idea, you know, in more recent years. And people will, like, you know, I do that all the time. What's wrong with that? My family speaks like that. I come from a geographical area in the country where, you know, we stand close to people, we touch people. I think it's the same for diversity training. I think people need to understand why. And I think when you're just throwing out these concepts and saying, don't do this, you know, you have a checklist, don't, but don't explain why and what's really behind it. That to me is the critical issue. And I'm like that too. I mean, if you're telling me don't, but you're not telling me why, I'm probably not going to be paying much attention to you either.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think the challenge, as I said, for employers is sometimes they don't know what to say. When somebody comes up to them and they ask them a question, I had this happen. We had one of the clients get asked by someone, so why don't you have your pronouns after your name? And the individual went, I don't have an answer for that. I don't even know what I can tell you. It literally said that out loud. And right. And because they didn't have an immediate response. They had an immediate gut reaction, but they didn't have a response for the employee. So, you know, that's a really good question of what do employers need to do when it comes to that? And how do they accept things they may not be willing to accept?
Yeah. I think that, again, that's really to me an education piece. And oftentimes when I'm doing trainings, I'll start with the C-suite or the board of directors, because I do think that this needs to come from the top. I think if the people at the top and the C-suite and the board are not going to have buy-in, not going to take ownership, then it's not going to work. And I can tell almost immediately, you know, I'll have somebody say, you know, I can tell when they want to check the box and okay, but it's not really going to do anything. And it is possible that can be more harmful. That doesn't mean that you're not training at, you know, at every level. I mean, I think you're having manager trainings and you're having employee trainings similar to what we do with anti-discrimination training. They're equally important. But my point is, if you're not starting at the top and having a direction and a vision and values and a mission statement, then you're just not going to get buy-in. You and I wouldn't buy in either. I mean, you wouldn't buy in if you don't believe that people really believe what they're preaching. If they don't, it's just human nature to turn off. And I'm definitely like that myself.
Well, of course, a lot of people are, right? That's our own personal belief of saying, you know, what's being authentic, right? Being authentic, right? Somebody who truly believes in what they're saying, and you know, we know when they don't, right? We know when they don't. I had to laugh when you were saying about the harassment training. My favorite is when we talk about people, you know, in harassment training, and they say, you know, it is unwanted behavior. And somebody will always stand up and go, I want it. I want to be harassed, right? And it's a levity fun moment in the room. And I go, and you're the reason you're here, sir. We're here right now because of you. It just makes me
turn that around. I did one last week. I was doing for employees. I was doing a anti-harassment training, and we were talking. I started with talking about women who feel harassed, and I had some statistics about the number of women who feel harassed in the workplace at some point in their career. And I was going to go on to that men can be harassed too. Before I could get there, a guy raised his hand and he said, what about men? He said, sometimes I'm really uncomfortable with things that women say to me. He said, you know, why is it okay for them and it's not for me? And I said, yeah, that doesn't work like that. And that was a perfect segue. But that's the kind of antipathy that you may get towards trainings, because they can appear to be biased, you know. And I think as a trainer, you really have to think about that, and you really need to answer people's questions honestly and talk about this. And, you know, you probably diffuse that situation immediately. And in my session, I did as well, because it was actually my very next slide.
Right.
So it was a good segue for me.
No, it's true. Well, of course, we're talking with Deb Weiss Ford. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
Don't you love that feeling when you've just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it? That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you. Get started today at StitchFix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerUp.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour Educational HR Radio, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and of course, we're talking with Deborah Weiss Ford today. She's with Jackson Lewis, and we're talking about basically DEI training and whether it has the positive or negative impact and all the possibilities around it. Deb, we talked a lot about in the last two segments about the training, about the, you know, some best practices around it, what you should do and shouldn't do. Let's talk a little bit about what seems to be all the rage right now, or a little bit, I will say, certainly more vocal, is the reverse discrimination situation, cases and social media and people being a lot more vocal about it. Why don't you give me your take on what's happening out there today and what you're hearing about? And then I know you have a big case to talk about.
Sure. So let's define it first. So when we talk about reverse discrimination, which is not a new issue. I mean, the first case was at the U.S. Supreme Court in 1970, and it's the idea that the employer can make an adverse employment decision based on an individual or group's membership in a dominant or majority group. And that's what it's all about. And so what we're seeing in today's world is, for example, a white employee who may say, I didn't get this job. I didn't get this promotion. I got terminated because you wanted to bring in a person of color. And I'm a good employee and I didn't do anything wrong and all my reviews are great. And so unfair to me. And that is reverse discrimination. And so courts look at it in different way, different burdens of proof. But for the most part, what we can say from the U.S. Supreme Court case and going forward is that Caucasian is a protected class, just as protected as a Black class or any other protected class. And that's what the legal basis is. So what we're seeing then are cases, including one in North Carolina, you know, fairly recently, I think it was 2021, and there was a $10 million verdict that, by the way, was reduced to $3 million by the court later, but still, you know, a very significant verdict. And it was basically a male employee who had been with the company for, you know, 6-7 years, something along those lines. And, you know, his point was that he was terminated, but he said that his reviews were good, that, you know, no one ever told him that he had any performance issues, that he did everything right, and that he lost his job because they wanted to bring in some minority candidates to do his job. And so he was replaced by two women, one who was Black and one who was white. And so that was the basis of the case. And, you know, it's really one of those cases, and we see this sometimes, where bad facts make bad law. You know, here the employer didn't do things that they should have done. If this guy was not a good employee, then there should have been documentation, which is, you know, axiomatic in any employment case. You know, anytime we don't have that kind of backup and performance reviews and warnings and discipline issues or whatever it is, it's very difficult to say before a jury, yeah, you know, Dave was the worst employee in the world, when Dave is able to show, you know, evaluations that show that he met expectations or even slightly exceeded it. That's what the point is. So it was a big case. It got everybody all excited, you know, for good reason. You know, when you hear $10 million, even though reduced to three, it's a lot. And it's going to cause an employer to pause in maybe its D&I efforts.
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly a lot of buzz around this right now today, right? And so I guess the question is, how do employers think about what should they say when somebody makes the comment? Because I think this is an important question, and I hear it a lot. Look, somebody brought up the fact that they feel discriminated against, or they feel reverse discriminated against, and they use the buzzword that they hear on social media or they hear somewhere else. What should an employer do at that point?
No, I think an employer has to have a candid conversation. I'm always a big fan of just being honest. You know, you hear this pushback from employers quite a bit, even today, where they'll say, well, you know, they're at will, and so I don't have to give them any reason for termination. And so legally, that may or may not be correct. There's lots of caveats to that. But the point is, that's just a bad idea. I mean, that's a bad practice. You know, the best practice is always to be candid. It's not that you have to, you know, go on and on for hours about how bad the person is, but I think you have to have a candid discussion about why you are doing what you're doing. So here, this, you know, as I understand the facts, if this employee was really not a good employee, then there should have been documentation. And the employer should always be able to say, this should not be a surprise to you, because on October 1st, we discussed X, Y, and Z, and your review showed E, I, E, I, O, whatever it is. I think that's the best way to handle it, direct and on point. And if you can't do that, then you shouldn't be taking the action that you're taking.
You know, I'm going to ask you something, and again, I don't want you to predict what's going to happen. It's more of a question. Of course, right now, you mentioned it, there's some cases in front of the Supreme Court, one having to do especially with affirmative action regarding, obviously, what exactly we're talking about. And one has to do with, I believe, a university, if I'm mistaken. Correct, I believe it has to do with university. What's your thought or your take on this? Because it's certainly getting a lot of press.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think you're talking mostly about the Harvard case. There are a couple of different cases that are out there. I mean, my take on it, just based on what I'm reading on the oral argument, is that, you know, we may see some changes from the court about what employers can do and what they can't do. And so I think we're all expecting in the reverse discrimination field, if the Supreme Court sides in favor of the plaintiffs who are complaining about the university affirmative action systems, I think we'll see that ruling in reverse discrimination cases. right? I think they'll cite to that to say, look, it's the same thing. It's not, but I think we will see that kind of an argument. So we're likely to continue to see controversy and maybe changes in legal positions as we go forward in 2023 and 2024. That's what I think. And the issue comes down to whether in this case, the universities are violating the equal protection clause. That's really what the issue is.
Yeah, I know. And I understand that. And, you know, I'm a believer that sometimes these cases help clarify things a little bit, right? So it's, you know, you can have a lot of argument about a lot of things, but, you know, at least you get a point of, you can reference something, right? Whether either way, you at least say we have a point that we know is accurate based upon the current law.
Right. And look, you and I can go on and on all day on this topic, because now we're seeing in some states, the legislatures are passing acts, like in Florida, you know, the Stop the Wrongs on Our Kids and Employees, the so-called woke, you know, the woke act. And so we're seeing some attempts to stop these kinds of trainings. And so if you are an employer in Florida, or you're a Maine employer and you have employees in Florida, you really need to pay attention to what states are doing, whether you agree or disagree with it. It is what it is. And although the Florida law in November 2022, the court issued a preliminary injunction preventing enforcement of the law. But for these trainings, when you're multi-jurisdictional, you really need to take a look at what you can and can't do.
I think that's the key anyway. It's always knowing where you are in terms of where your employees are so that you can do what is correct and stay compliant. Again, we're talking with Deborah Weiss Ford. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and, of course, podcasts on all major podcast channels. We will be right back. Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored and thank our sponsoring law firms of Verrill, Sheehan Finney, Jackson Lewis, and McLean Middleton. Our partner sponsors of Healthcare Purchase Alliance and Strategic HR. Want to be a sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say, we want to be an HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one, and we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and of course, you're listening to Educational HR Radio. Our guest today has been and continues to be Deborah Weiss-Ford. She's with the law firm Jackson Lewis, and of course, we are talking about basically diversity programs, whether they work or they don't. You know, Deb, as we're looking at diversity training, as we're looking at DEI training, as we're looking at doing all these things, and employers are trying to, for best, you know, row as fast as they can to figure out what to do, what are best practices that they should take away from today? What are things that they should do right now over the next 6 months to at least get their workplace in better shape around this issue?
Right. So, look, it's a good question. I think the first thing is, what's the overall game plan? I mean, I'm always looking at the big picture. What are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to accomplish a more diverse workplace? Are you trying to accomplish your employees and managers being more educated on the issues surrounding diversity, surrounding inclusion, surrounding unconscious bias? And then what are the specific measures that you're going to take? And when you break that down, the specific measures, are they education? Are you going to do trainings? Are you going to have an employee resource group that will, you know, break down various components of the workplace with affinity groups to discuss this more thoroughly? But in other words, you know, you want to have an overall strategy to decide what you're going to do. Once you decide that, then you need to get into the specifics. You know, is it going to be a series of trainings that are going to occur over a period of time? Are we going to have, you know, three trainings in a year or one training in a year? And then what are we going to do to enforce that training and to make sure that we are getting our message out and that we are meeting our mission? Then I think that a very specific time and effort needs to be taken to hiring. You know, we've talked about that a few times today. You know, one of the most challenging things in today's market is recruitment and retention. And I think we need to train our managers on what we're looking for in a workforce in a fair way, in a fair and equitable way. And so I think it's important then to understand, what are the legal definitions? You know, what can we say? What can we not say? What's a legal goal? What's not? Can we give incentives to manager to hire people of color, or disabled people, or whatever the protected category is? You know, what's legal? What's not legal, I think, is important. And then I think we have to morph into, what is reverse discrimination? Because I think some of the pushback is that it's a do nothing. You know, it's a big concept and a big idea, and we talk about things and then nothing happens. And I think that's some of the pushback that we're seeing. So I think we need to understand, what are the legalities of reverse discrimination? What does it mean? How do we not get into a situation like what happened in North Carolina with that, the healthcare employer that had the $10 million judgment against them? And there are some very specific practical points that the employer can take, all of which are basic employment concepts. Document. Be honest, be candid, talk to people. Don't just hit them by surprise, and don't manage as though you want the employee to voluntarily leave. Manage so that you manage somebody to leave if that's what the ultimate goal is. So those are some of the issues that I see.
No, then that's great advice. And by gosh, you could use that same advice for any topic, couldn't you? Really, any, you know, what's the goal? With the goal in mind, how do you get there? And so that's great. Deb, as always, it's awesome to have you on the show. Appreciate it so much. I'm going to have you back this year, I think. We're going to talk about this a little bit more, maybe on a different subject, tease in the audience, something's coming. And we'll go from there if you're willing to do it.
That'd be great. I'm very willing to do it. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. And it's nice talking to you this morning.
You as well. Of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, Educational HR Radio, on WLOB 100.5 FM and podcasts on all major podcast channels.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone. And remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.